Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steve, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank the Creator for allowing me to be. I'd also like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please, press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please, press the number one to speak. You can contact or reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions. Listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, public enemy number one. Has the black man become his deadliest enemy? Black on black homicide numbers supports the idea that he is his worst enemy. Are there other contributing factors that impact on the black on black murder rate? I saw a show on YouTube where a host stated black on black homicides and assaults, and those who perpetrate such crimes are or should be the number one enemy of black people. Something like that. And I've thought about that, you know, because, you know, black people have a history here that's pretty traumatic. When you talk about who have been the enemy of black people. So, well, yes, we have a gun problem in the hood, but most of all, we have a people problem. As the saying goes, guns don't kill, people do. It appears to be past the idea of self-defense. It's way past that. It is a culture of revenge and opportunity. Some say that black men are expressing their self-hatred. Basically, they're hunting themselves. People who look like them, at least some are. However gun violence manifests in the community, people soon learn that you can't bring a knife to a gunfight, and the sale of legal and illegal firearms have boomed. At some point, the gun has become the preferred and necessary tool of choice for aggressors, perpetrators, and civilians. Being armed has become a damn if you do, damn if you don't, and damn if you happen to be near the situation. However, we spend the reason for this. There is no excuse for this madness. And I know we can spin it a lot of ways. I'm gonna touch on some of the different ways you can spin it. From the Washington Post, 2022, it was written, said that homicides were the leading cause of death for black men ages 15 through 44 in 2020. You know, it's sad when an abstract written in 1983 remains relevant today, almost 20 years later. From the Office of Justice Programs, Black on Black Homicide, a Psychological Political Perspective, he said. Basically, this was published in 1983. Black homicide rate are 7 to 8 times those of whites. Blacks have a rate of probably only 4 to 5 times that of whites. Today, homicide is the leading cause of death amongst young black men. We say in about 80-90% of the cases, the black victim was killed by another black person, right? About 52% of the murder victims were acquainted with their assailant. They kind of knew them. I mean, they don't have to be your best friend. It could be somebody you know, right? You can identify. You know them, right? So, they said just as we accept suicide victims are psychologically impaired, right? That we should be acknowledging that similarly, that a murderer is similarly impaired. He's also impaired. They say blacks, for both environmental and political reasons, are likely to reflect emotional predispositions that allow them to more readily become a homicide statistic. So it's two sides to a homicide statistic. You either the perpetrator or the victim. So they went on to say that refer to the projected self-hatred facilitates blind rage and gives the perpetrator of the violent attack a sense of legitimacy and justification. So as I said, I think Nipsey Hussle had spoke about that, how, you know, when they went looking for the other guys, that they were looking for people who look like him. When they see a certain guy dressed a certain way, they wouldn't, you know, jump out in the car and do nothing to him. But the guy that looked like him on the other side, that was the guy that was hunting. He said he came to the conclusion that he was hunting himself over there. Anyway, they say blacks have been indoctrinated by a criminal justice system, which places them in a higher value on white life than on black life. That refers to how black people get more time. They may get more time if they do something to a white person than they would a black person. Might be out more. So I guess might be what they're saying. Referring to those statistics, I don't have them, so we're gonna keep it moving because you're not gonna focus on that. So I said it's important to explore variables in the in black community violence. So all the variables. So there's a lot of things, like we say, like, you know, anybody committing murder are just out there just trying to get a reputation. So it happens, and I don't know. It just seems like that's the way a certain group of people are just dealing with things, you know, or not dealing with things. Anyway, they say programs focused on crime and violence prevention therefore must do more than alleviate these socioeconomic ills, right? You know, we have to be able to take care of our basic needs and things like that. And sometimes, you know, people like to know that they have the ability to enhance their quality of life. And I understand that, you know, but that's still no reason to excuse. I mean, it'd be a reason. Like I say, anybody can have any kind of a reason to do something, but that doesn't excuse murdering people. But they said they must pay attention as well to negative psychological dynamics in the black experience that contribute to internecine black on black, with intergroup victimization, right? So, the black community in particular is in dire need of homicide prevention centers with programs of prevention, research, and treatment. Might even need relocation in that, you know, that's how bad it is. I heard stories about guys that were in California, they came back to South Philly and got killed. Like, you know, they were in some kind of singing group or something. One guy came back, walked the girl home, got killed. So, forward to 2015, right? WTOC CDC report. Homicide, leading cause of death for black men ages 15 to 34. Washington Post, 2022. Homicide were the leading cause of death for black men ages 15 to 44 in 2020 and are running just behind accidents of all kinds, including drug overdoses. Gainesville Sun. Homicide ranked number one as the leading cause of death for African-American males ages 1 to 44, and fourth leading cause for African-American males for all ages. Fox News. With this here. Homicide is the leading cause of death in non-Hispanic black males aged 1 to 44, CDC says, published July 22nd, 2020, right? This thing called the Borden Report. Homicide, 2019. CDC report says that homicide is the leading cause of death among black men ages 15 to 34 years. Three age categories, right? Second leading cause of death for black women age 15 to 24. Now, that was new to me. You know, because that's really sad because, as we used to say, women used to get a pass. But it seems like now, you know, it's more and more women getting gunned down. And not that it's okay to kill a guy. I'm not even suggesting that. It's not okay to kill men. But it seems like now that women are not getting a pass. The fifth leading cause of death for black women aged 25 34 years. Among women aged 15 to 24, homicide accounts for 5% of premature deaths in white females, but 20% of all premature deaths by black females. So needless to say, Houston, we have a problem. Get my point? We're at war with one another. At least a segment of the population is at war within the black population. Then I'm going to say we to somebody that might be naive enough to think that I'm saying that all 13% of blacks in the United States are engaging in this nonsense. It makes you wonder, though, if there is any place we could live without the constant threat of violence and death from our own parents. I grew up in the hood. I ain't always done the right thing. But I remember just as a kid, you know, laying on the floor. Because, you know, the guys outside, I was a small kid. My grandma, she told me, lay put your head down on the floor. They shooting outside. You know, I remember as a kid doing that, you know. And I remember as a teenager, being the guy on the outside was probably somebody else holding their kid's head down while we out there was doing something foolish. So it just, you know, even before I was in that, even in that kind of thing, I had been jumped a couple of times, you know. So it's like, you know, what's up? You know, what's up with us? You know, why are we so aggressive toward each other like that, you know? Fox News say at least 7,484 black Americans were murdered in 2019. The FBI data, Fox News Digital reported that up to at least 9,941 murders in it shot up to 9,941 murders in 2020. So there were 7,484 in 2019. It shot up to 9,941 in 2020. Right? Meaning there was an increase of 2,457 black Americans murdered. It's a murder. Among white murders, the FBI showed that there were 7,000 43 white people murdered in 2020, meaning 2,898 more black people were killed than whites, right? They said an average of 6,927 black Americans were murdered each year between 2010 and 2019, meaning black murders shot up by 43% in 2020 compared to the previous 10-year average. From The Nation, posed the question, what is the problem? And I think, everybody's asking that question. Because I hear people just talking about what is going on that these folks are gunning people down like this. It's not just, it's all over. It seems like it's just all these, big cities, impoverished neighborhoods. Why are they so hell-bent on destroying each other? They say black Americans are disproportionately impacted by gun violence, which those numbers I just read support. Because we're only 12-13% of the population, they say. Right? So they experience 10 times the gun homicides, 18 times the gun assault injuries, and nearly 3 times the fatal police shootings of white Americans. All right, so this isn't, this is not the type of thing you want to be proud of. Gun homicides, assaults, and police shootings are disproportionately prevalent in historically underfunded neighborhoods and cities. That would be your poor neighborhoods, right? The lack of funding intensifies our country's longstanding racial inequity, they said, right? Local groups, residents, and city officials are driving solutions to reduce gun violence and increase safety in their community, but data and resources are needed to support these efforts. And as you know, we live in a capitalistic society, which means you're going to need money. Not too many people just going to give you things. Right? So historically underfunded neighborhoods are cities where the areas are impoverished, right? This is a contributing factor. Data and resources cost money. Who is going to invest money in a community that appears to be designated for the impoverished in the interest of the impoverished? Who's going to do that? Is the theory, because I am poor, I am angry and desperate and will feed upon the impoverished, and they shall know my wrath and fear me, respect me, or die. Is that the thinking? What happened to, I will use what is available, education, employment, skills, talent, to get what I need, what is best for my people, my community, and my family? What about, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? Maybe that's just wishful thinking. But imagine more of us thinking this way. From EPI.org, I say nearly half, 45% of poor black children live in neighborhoods with concentrated poverty, but only a tenth, 12% of poor white children live in similar neighborhoods, right? So there you have a disparity right there, right? but said, children in neighborhoods with concentrated poverty experience more social and behavioral problems, have lower test scores, and are more likely to drop out of school. Research suggests that reducing children's exposure to concentrated poverty can improve their likelihood of upward economic mobility. Okay, so notice they use the word children. So that's the root. That's the root of the man, the child, right? Because we start coming to the world as men. We come as children. So you have to nourish the root, right? To raise the man up. So that perpendicular, you got to be able to put that time in, invest in your offspring, your people. So they're saying a disproportionate number of poor black children reside in neighborhoods with concentrated poverty, and that with add that with people kill people they live in close proximity to, and you have a recipe for disaster. See, because most white people killed by white people, most black people killed by black people. So and then you add that, it's like a pot, a bomb somebody's making. You can make different types of bombs you can make. This is a bomb you can make, a social bomb. You can create a socialist emotional explosion you can make. You have an area, concentrated poverty, right? Just people just not feeling good about their situation. And then, we know that people will lash out against the people who's closest to them, right? When they have issues, some people will do that. Every poor person does not resort to violence, but if poverty is a contributing factor, it would explain why blacks who live in impoverished neighborhoods experience a disproportionate amount of murders. That is not to say that all impoverished black people commit murder, please. Poverty is not an excuse to murder. Murder is unacceptable. I think we all can agree with that. We're not talking about self-defense here. From Everytown Research, they say, in reality, although some gun violence is connected to gang activity, gun violence occurs more frequently within informal social networks tied together by the places people live, the schools they attend, the places they worship. Gun violence within these social networks is further concentrated into a very small percentage of people. The gun violence frequently occurs spontaneously following a dispute or perceived disrespect and between two people who are known to each other. These encounters become deadly because a gun is present. I'm just going to add to that. You don't need a gun to kill somebody, but I think it increases, the gun increases the lethality, the ability to be lethal. But you don't need a gun to kill nobody. Lots of people getting killed other than with guns. So, but perceived disrespect. Now, I don't know what that means, disrespect. You spit in my face. You grab my woman on, as Donald Trump says, grab them by the private parts. I don't know what type of disrespect you're talking about. I don't know if you're looking at somebody, you nudged them on the way to the counter, something kicked their shoe, brand new sneakers. I don't know. what he's talking about, but if it's just perceived disrespect, is it something that we can negotiate, use our words to deal with, or are people purposely disrespecting people to bring this outcome about? Excuse me. So, I was thinking about the concept of disrespect. If you feel so strong about disrespect that someone should be losing their life, so is disrespect, is the penalty for disrespect death? Is that what we're saying? Or that what some people are saying, the penalty for disrespect is death. This is going that concept. Does that mean that those who adhere or subscribe to this ideology perceive the death penalty as a responsible consequence for those who disrespect the law, the community, families, in the life of another human being? Because if you feel, you believe that somebody disrespects you, you should take their life. Is it that cold-blooded? Maybe for some. And if you feel that way, do you feel taking a life is disrespectful? Impacting on a whole lot of people, everybody, that whole community, that family, that or that person, and of course, person that you actually murdered. Because we're not talking about self-defense here. We're just talking about disrespect. He said, "F you." You know, there are some people out here to kill you over that. Definitely some people punch you in the mouth, right? You know, punch in the mouth lead to somebody running to go get that chopper. Right? Because a lot of people don't want to take an L. Don't want to take that loss. They don't want to control themselves so that they don't put themselves in that situation. So I get the whole respect thing. You know, I understand that it's offensive. And I think maybe we need to get some thicker skin when it comes to some of this nonsense. Not worth going spending the rest of your life in jail, getting gunned down because you gunned down somebody who disrespected you. Now somebody's got to come shoot you, and now somebody's got to go shoot that person who shot you, and, you know. Is it a selective consequence? What's good for the goose isn't good for the gander situation? Do you feel like, oh, no, he disrespected me, I killed him, but I shouldn't be killed for killing him. He disrespected me. Is it kind of like a narcissistic approach to murder? Just how pervasive is this death for disrespect or death before dishonor ideology? What does it cover? You know, if that is an ideology that, you know, that somebody deserves to die because they have disrespected you. Now, we do need to deal with all the, you know, people who disrespect people. You have to be, but you have to deal with it in a way that it doesn't harm people. Words do hurt. I heard people say, words don't hurt. Words do hurt. I get it. You know, I'm not going to pretend that people can't say something to you, especially when you're having a bad day and, you know, they catch, you know, they write a check that they behinds can't catch. I get all of that. But when the smoke clears and the judge giving you 5 to 15, 20 to life, you know, stuff like that, a lot of times you see that it's just for words. It's just not worth it. Weapons, particularly a gun, increases the individual's chance of being the victim of a violent encounter. But I just want to add on to that, that it's a lose-lose situation, as I just said. You kill somebody, now the law is after you, and whoever cared enough about that person to kill you is after you. What kind of life is that? You sit in the car at a light, somebody walk up to you, blow your brains out. You know, maybe the balance of disrespect is a projection of the anger someone feels about their disenfranchised, impoverished condition. And the disrespect is the last straw. He's already, you know, with that song, don't push me because I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. You know, it's like a jungle sometimes, you know, trying to keep from going under. You know, maybe it's that, you know, type of situation. If you just, that disrespect is that last straw, that thing that pushes the person over the edge. You don't know who you're talking to out there. You don't know. You don't know how that God day went. You don't know what just happened in his life. Her life. You know, pride and fear. I've had someone explain to me like this about this whole thing about this fight. Why fight when if you win, the loser's only going to get a gun and try to kill you? So this is a young boy. And he said, so they skip the gun fight and go straight. They skip the fist fight and go straight to the gun fight. Or the gun down, because they're not waiting for you to get your gun. It appears that there was a history and culture of violence and murder in the United States. Y'all can research that yourself. We ain't getting that right there. It's a forever kind of show. From CNN, who is killing 10,000 black Americans every year? I don't know how they got that number 10,000, but that's almost 10,000. But it's from the number I just gave you. This is from October 2021. It said FBI statistics on violent crime in America showing a record 30% surge in homicide in 2020 over 2019. Right. So this thing is just getting worse. And, you know, it kind of makes sense that it might rise because every time you kill somebody, there's a possibility that there's one or two or three people that might want to kill you. Just watch these videos. It's like, you know, it's not all one guy jumping out of these vans. It's like maybe four, five, six guys armed to the teeth jumping out of these vans, these cars murdering people. It'll be at least two. Very rarely do you see one guy doing that. Anyway, they said, what caused the number of U.S. citizens, U.S. victims, caused the number of U.S. victims of murder and manslaughter to explode by almost 5,000, they said? While homicides rising another 10%. Why murders and manslaughter is rising so dramatically, right? For the number of killings. Is this right? For that number of killings, 21,500 in 2021 is three times the number of U.S. soldiers dead in 20 years of fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's for the, that's everybody, y'all. Yeah, so we're at war. This country has a history of violence, and it has never become a part of the history because it's still here. The New York Times and Washington Post both made the FBI figures front page news. The Times gave some insight as to who the victims of homicide in this country were and are. I guess you know where I'm going with this. The FBI report says they broke it down by race, ethnicity, and sex. Although not all enforcement agencies provided such data. This ain't even all the data, right? Of the people killed in 2020. At least 9,913, that's close to 10,000, were black. 7,029 were white. 497 were from other races, and 315 were of unknown race. There were at least 14,146 men killed and 3,573 women. Women are not getting a pass. So I don't know. This is women. This is not black women, white women. This is just women. But you know where it's going to go, right? There were nearly 3,000 more black victims who wound up dead, right, from criminal violence than there were white victims. Blacks at 12-13% of the U.S. population and only 1/5 the size of the white population. They have been beaten to death at a rate 6 to 7 times that are white. By the end of the year, well over 10,000 blacks would have been made victims of homicide in America. The figure breaks down roughly 200 black folks dead every single week in this country. 200 black folks dead every single week in this country, in the U.S., right? This country is the U.S., United States, right? So from gunshot wounds and other criminal violence, right? And you say, you don't need a gun to murder someone, right? A weekly death toll that rivals U.S. losses in Vietnam at the height of the war. Excuse me. I'm just getting over some serious sinus issues. The question unanswered and unasked in the Times and the Post stories is, who is doing this? Who is killing all these black people? Well, you know, people kill who they are in close proximity to, right? Then they went on to say, to get into this thing about the slogan, Black Lives Matter. They said, why is there not a greater public alarm at BLM, Black Lives Matter, that's an organization, right? And who is killing so many black people? How many blacks in 2021 and this year were victims of Proud Boys or Oath Keepers or 3%ers or neo-Nazis or the Klan, right? I don't know. But if one was a victim of any one of those groups, that's one too many. If road cops are the scourge of black America, as we have been instructed to believe, how many killings of unarmed blacks were done by white cops this year and last? Excuse me. They talk about the increased homicide in Washington. Let me get some water. Basically, they were saying that, I don't know why all this falling on the Black Lives Matter movement, but this particular person thinks that the Black Lives Matter is not making a big stink about black or black crime, right? So, so after reading the article, I was thinking, like, what? Rogue white cops or rogue cops are as much a scourge to the black America as rogue black people who murder black people. The difference is law enforcement can murder someone on video and it can be explained away. Most U.S. murders for white and black victims are interracial, right? White on white, black on black. That means there is a homicide problem in some white communities too, right? There is a saying, my enemy is my enemy. Not all skin folk are kin folk. They appear to be true. The black on black murder rate is no excuse for murder at the hands of law enforcement. It feels like they are implying or questioning why black people should make such a statement about law enforcement murdering black people when blacks murder more blacks than law enforcement does. You have to be pretty stupid not to understand why black people detest being harassed, assaulted, and murdered by law enforcement or those who are supposed to protect. A better question would be, where is the public outcry from law enforcement denouncing the murdering of civilians, identifying and arresting officers that offend, prosecuting offending officers for their crimes to the fullest extent of the law? That's a better question than this guy's asking about why aren't Black Lives Matter making a big stink about black on black crime. I don't really know what Black Lives Matter is doing. They're not my leader. And I don't know whose leader they are. You know, they led this most recent protest after this George Floyd thing, you know, but that's just one organization, one group of people. Anyway. The U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Program from there, they talk about gangs being public enemy number one. Well, Philadelphia really doesn't have gangs, but they do have cliques, right? Which, you know, that operates the same way as gangs do. But gangs are very, they have a very kind of specific behavior, like the areas and stuff like that. But cliques don't, because you can be in a, belong to a clique in South Philly and live in Germantown. So, anyway, Chicago area has about 125 street gangs, including between 30,000 and 50,000 hardcore gang members and 100,000 hardcore and marginal members in the city. That's a lot of gang members right there. Man, what is everybody in Chicago gang banging? Anyway, street gangs represent all ethnic groups, right? So young people must also learn to learn the futility of gang involvement and the likelihood that it will lead to death or imprisonment. I think they know that. You know, they know that. They know that people get killed and people go to jail being in the gang and people get shot and hacked up and knocked in the head, you know, jumped. And they do the same to other people. So they have to not want that. Not want that or perceive that as part of their life. That's what I think they have to do. They learn the futility of the gang. They know about it. They see it. They have to not want it. Anyway, to this day, Chicago has the same problem. Needless to say, Chicago has a high homicide rate. But are gang feuds the source of homicide, of the homicide increase? Is this Arthur trying to scapegoat gangs? From MSN News. I guess it was a minister speaking to a crowd, talking about terrible things African Americans have endured, slavery, racism, lynching, inequality, and every type of injustice you can imagine. Don't forget the thousands of black men in jail and in prison. That's interesting because some people belong in jail and some people don't, as we know. I just read a story about a guy who was convicted of murder, innocent man convicted of murder, was in jail for death row for 30 years. Police officer said he didn't care if he committed the crime or not, told him why he would be convicted. One, he said a white man's going to identify you as the perp. You're going to have a white judge. You're going to have a white jury. And I forget what other things he said, but it was like, whoa. And when he put it that way, it made sense. And he was convicted, but he's home now, but he was convicted for 30 years. Nobody didn't care if he did it or not. You know, didn't care if he's innocent or not. Anyway, so how could we, the speaker went on to say, minister, how could we forget the deplorable social condition that's responsible for our young men wasting their lives behind bars? Men who could have been, who could have made great contributions were it not for the fact that they were black and at the mercy of a racist society. He goes on to say, then somebody else spoke for the crowd, right? You know, they chanted, they went to the chant, no justice, no peace, went to that thing. Then a voice said, what about black on black crime? I think the guy's name is Mr. Madison, right? But the crowd that they got quiet. The person said, you and other black leaders, who shall remain nameless for obvious reasons, protest and take to the streets when African Americans are murdered by people of European descent. However, you can't be found when blacks kill each other. She also said that if we focus on how we treat each other, we could drastically reduce black-on-black crime. But we're too busy pretending that the problem doesn't exist. That's a hell of a statement to say that people are pretending that this problem, I don't know who the we is pretending that the problem doesn't exist. I don't know. Maybe that's what's happening where they are. But I like to say, on the contrary, black people's they made a statement there about, you know, black people don't air their dirty laundry in public, right? That's what the preacher mumbled, right? When I said, on the contrary, black people's dirty laundry is aired every time a black person assaults and or murders another black person. Law enforcement and the CDC are tracking the body count. You know, the lady suggested that we stop supporting fakers, right? If you say the Caucasian, you better guess again it if you think the Caucasian is the number one cause of all blacks being murdered. But we already know that, right? The same thing for white people, right? The number one group sponsored for killing blacks are blacks, right? So she should bring it to attention, like, hey, well, you know, how come you're not, this particular guy's not doing anything about that? Because I'm not going to even say that nothing's being done about that. According to the Justice Department, young black men get aged 15 to 19 are the leading victims of homicide at the hands of other blacks. Now that sounds like gang warfare right there. That age group right there. That's a gang warfare age. So I get what the lady was saying. But I would like to say first, we is far too great an indictment. That is far too great an indictment. The we are not committing crimes against each other. A particular segment of the black population is committing crimes against the black community. There are many peace-loving, decent people in the black community. Because amidst all of this gunfire and murder and all of this stuff, don't turn a blind eye to the decent people in those very same impoverished communities. Don't do that to those kids that are trying to go to school, trying to come up out of that situation. Second, there is a serious problem in the black community involving black-on-black homicide and assault. Third, the number one group responsible for killing white people is white people. Where is their leaders and that protest, or does that raise the question, does white lives matter to white people? Who is this genius that thinks that we have to have mass protests to determine that something matters? Blacks discuss the assault, murder, and the things that lead to violence frequently. How to navigate around violence, respond and react to violence, mediation, self-escalation, and reporting violence. The downside is there are those who continue to plot the destruction of others who are locked into the ruthless cycle of violence. There have been many gatherings, vigils, marches in the spirit of stopping the violence. The community is traumatized, grieving, angry, sad, perplexed, puzzled, and in a heightened state of alert. Our cortisol levels are probably high. She's accusing the black leaders of addressing racism and police brutality, but not this black-on-black crime. So, black-on-black homicide may very well be rooted in race or structural or systemic racism. We as black people must also hold ourselves accountable for this heinous crime. After all, they are our sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, both perpetrator and victim. I don't know about black leaders, but people from the black community meet with police and city officials to discuss the crime in the community. We don't need a so-called leader to do that. BLM, Black Lives Matter organization, is not the leader of black people. They lead Black Lives Matter. The black or black murder rate is a constant topic in the hood. So the article went on to say, how can we combat black on black crime? Stop denying that the problem exists. I don't know anybody that denies that. Matter of fact, all I'm hearing is people talking about it. When blacks kill each other, show as much anger as you would if the situation was reversed. Maybe she's talking about on a big screen or something like that, because people don't like this killer. But I don't know, maybe this area right here. We should instill in ourselves that violence is not the answer, and everyone's life is viable. Totally agree with that. Sort of. Let's put away our guns and knives as we work to stop the flow of blood that threatens every black man, woman, and child. How's that for a dose of reality? That's nice, but that's almost like what I was saying. You know, it's not going to be that black and white. These guys are not going to do that. They've got people holding on to things, revenge, I don't think anybody denies the existence of black on black homicide and the trauma it has caused in the community. Fact is, this country was founded to maintain on violence. We enjoy certain freedoms and luxuries due to the violence perpetrated and threatened by this country. America was born out of Revolutionary War. Then there was the Civil War and many more. Wars have been fought in preservation of U.S. interest groups or U.S. corporation interests. The police force carries a weapon of death, which assures you that violence might or could be the answer or response. We should be very well aware of our behavior, respecting all who come along the way of life. There may very well be a time for violence, but not until absolutely necessary. Violence as an initial response is indicative of social-emotional immaturity, emotional instability, and an environmental instability. We cannot afford either. Economic deprivation appears to have an impact on violence also, though not all economically deprived black people resort to violence. Black people need to at least agree that violence is not a primary option. Preferably, as the lady said, not an option at all. We would love that. That would then be heaven. It is time to take a giant step for peace in the black community. People will need to heal from the trauma of losing someone or causing someone to lose someone. We got a lot of pain, a lot of healing to do, and it's going to take some time. It's not a black and white issue like, all right, just stop doing that, y'all. It's not that simple. It is difficult to perceive black people as a people after being divided on so many levels, but difficulty has historically always been a constant thing for black people in the USA. We must set an example, a standard of what it looks like to be united. Maybe then many will seek opportunities that promote life, prosperity, and goodwill. Maybe black people should be protesting and marching in the streets to end poverty and disenfranchisement. Maybe that's what we need to be in the street, marching against, protesting. The social, political, economical things that facilitate these conditions that impoverished people in impoverished communities prey on each other, have low tolerance for each other. From the Daily Veracity, according to a study of S.J. Quinney College of Law, American cities are witnessing significant declines in some forms of policing, which in turn is producing exponential homicide spikes. So, okay. What? The recent spikes of homicide have been caused by a Minneapolis effect, similar to the earlier Ferguson effect, right? Directly after the 2015 protest. So basically saying that, I'm going to read this. According to another report from the Daily Mail, proactive policing in Minneapolis plunged dramatically following the death of George Floyd last year, even as violent crime soared, traffic stops in the city dropped by 74% in high crime areas. Patrols plummeted by 76%. Anonymous police source said that the slowdown was due to a massive staffing shortage amid an exodus from the department, and the exodus was due to fear becoming the next flashpoint. One officer said that some Minneapolis officers now deliberately take a longer route than necessary to respond to 9/11 calls, hoping that whatever incident the call was about will be resolved by the time they arrive. That means somebody's murdered. The average police response time is to prioritize 9/11 calls was 40% longer than it had been earlier that year. In Chicago, the number of cops that have retired this year has already surpassed all the retirements in 2018, right? So they jumped the ship, right? They don't want to be prosecuted for things that they do wrong, which is, that's not right. Don't do the wrong thing. You don't have to worry about becoming a flashpoint. With only around 13,000 of cops remaining, Chicago's 117,000 gang members now outnumber officers by roughly 10 to 1 at a time when the city's facing a surge in homicides, right? In addition, the black share of known homicide offenders rose to a record of almost 60%, with the same demographic committing over 50% of the violent crime for the year. The number of known murder offenders increased by 17.3%. The number of unknown murder offenders grew 36%. Murders in black neighborhoods tend to have the lowest clearance, right? Solving rate, right? Rate. And overall, around 50% of all violent crime goes unsolved. Man, that's something else. I think that's all across the board. So, to think that black people accept black-on-black homicide and assault and do not perceive, feel, believe, know that it places the community in a state of trauma is to be more than naive. To compare the difference in the black community's response to police murdering black people and black-on-black homicide is pointless. The issue with law enforcement seems like a problem that can be corrected, even eradicated. After all, how difficult can it be for law enforcement to adhere to the law? Yet, law enforcement still murder black people, and it has been pretty quiet on the street. If you can't see that law enforcement and murder should not be used in the same sentence, you have a problem. Law enforcement should not have the power, option, or qualified immunity to commit murder or assault people. Mind you, murder, not self-defense, not justified homicide, murder. All right? Look it up. You'll know what it is. Theoretically, law enforcement are paid to adhere to the law, not break it. It is a red flag when we are holding a conversation about law enforcement committing heinous crimes, even if they have a history of doing so. Law enforcement should have evolved from the slave catcher posse, lynching mob, racist organization it was. It should have. We are not paying thugs and madmen to do anything. We do not trust that they will obey the law or respect the community, families, or individuals. That is why we have law enforcement to deter or intervene and apprehend lawbreakers, civilian or law enforcement. A community has a duty to support law enforcement in the lawful commission of pursuing violators of the law. Law enforcement has a duty to support their community in support of their legal pursuit of lawbreakers. That support will be difficult to gain if law enforcement behaves in an unlawful, aggressive manner, injuring and sometimes murdering members of the community. Society, government, and economic, has a duty to protect the lives of the people as not to impair or impede their ability to survive, provide food, shelter, clothing, safety, and enhance their quality of life. So we have these certain disenfranchised communities where they know, known fact, it's grounds for murders, homicides, conflict, anger. From everytownwatch.org, say black people in America are then three times as likely to be shot and killed by police than white Americans, right? Well, in fact, police murdering anyone is a serious problem, black or white. For all the protesting, marching, rioting, law enforcement continues to disproportionately murder black people. You would think that we would be able to eradicate law enforcement murdering and assaulting people. This is where the similarity between black-on-black crime and law enforcement lies. If there is no severe consequences for these heinous acts, are not likely to subside or be reduced. If some people want to see a greater response to the black-on-black homicide, don't wait for someone else to ignite the movement. Become the black leader leading a movement protesting black-on-black murder. Black people do protest and detest black-on-black homicide. How could anyone think that the murdering of a son, daughter, mother, father does not impact on the black community? For decades, residents have come together to ensure public safety within their communities through street outreach, hospital-based violence intervention programs, and more. So I don't know why people say nobody's going to do anything. But lawmakers need to do their part, but must prioritize community and evidence-based solutions to gun violence, assess their racial impact, and develop systems to end and ensure accountability for police shootings. God, do that. And this thing with the police, the police station should be, that should be an easy or solved situation. So, for PT, the problem is black people have rarely, if ever, been able to make lawmakers do their part. That is assuming that their part provides a systemic solution to the systemic factors that facilitate and contribute to violence in the black community. Just what does the black community want a politician to do, to create, to do? What would the black community want the politician to do? Create harsh penalties for the brazen murderers? Maybe a guaranteed speedy death sentence? Will black people be upset when the majority of those sentenced to death are black convicted murderers? Will employment solve or reduce the homicide rate? Are there some people that we just can't save? Is the black community afraid to act against this murdering, violent segment of their population? I saw a video of a woman, of a young man, waiting for a woman to walk near him, and when she did, he murdered her. I think she was a witness in a case. Should responsible black people self-police their communities at risk of contributing to the homicide, assault, and incarceration rate? Black people tend to need to plant and reinforce a value system in the heart of every black person. Develop and nurture and perpetuate our own culture dedicated to the fulfillment of life, unity of black people, collective economics, education, history, spirituality of black people, praying to the Creator for help while helping ourselves by any means necessary, saving us from us. This is from The Nation. While about half of African Americans were surveyed nationally described police brutality 54% and police misconduct 50% in America as extremely serious problems, 80% of African Americans described gun violence in America as an extremely serious problem. They both are extremely serious problems. They say fewer guns on the streets would improve the relationship between the police and the community they serve. I thought about that. I said, that's odd. We had fewer guns on the streets in the 60s and 70s, and the Black Panther Party was formed in defense of the black community against the tyranny of law enforcement. More guns on the street actually reduced police violence in the black community, right? These were guns with a purpose and a legitimate cause. Armed, intelligent black men and women were feared by racist government, fascist police that were used to beating, kicking, and water hosing, setting police dogs on peaceful, nonviolent, threatening protesters. Martin Luther King, right? Now our sons have also become the dogs that violate black lives, snatching young and old black life from this side of the dirt like a plague. Similarly, the communities with which we met through improving police community relations was a key factor in reducing gun violence. Distrust that stems from arbitrary stops and discriminatory enforcement makes residents less willing to work with police and makes communities less safe. That's right. Sometimes police stop you for no reason. They don't have a reason to stop you. I had a guy tell me he stopped me because I gave a kid some money. All I did was I shook the kid's hand. I worked with this kid. I seen him. He crossed the street in front of my car. Hey, what's up? Shook his hand. Drove. This nut cop followed me. Stopped me. When I asked him why he stopped me, he said because I gave the kid some money. And so, is it the longest giving somebody some money out in public? I told him he was racial profiling. He said he wasn't, which was a lie. You know, I just didn't let him go any farther, but. He was a nut cop. Anyway, the black community was targeted by law enforcement in the 60s and the 70s, and it continues to have the same kind of law enforcement brutality and abuse issues today, right? So the article went on to say that, basically got to improve police and relations, you know, and I think one of the first steps to that is it's not about training police. The police are trained. Unless they're training people to be brutal and murderers, they are trained. It'll make no sense. You know, some of the things they're doing. Sandra Bland smoking a cigarette in the car. Shots out to put her cigarette out, which has nothing to do with a traffic stop. It's over 70 instead of civilian review boards, body worn cameras, and racial bias assessment, and training police. Some of the things they want the cops to have, like train them what? You don't need training not to kick a dude in the head, not to put your knee on somebody's neck, and stuff like that, not to choke somebody on the ground because he's selling Lucy cigarettes. Or shoot a 12-year-old kid with a toy gun within seconds of pulling up, creating your own jeopardy in your own mind. No, these guys are just violating their trade. They'll violate their trade and get away with it. And people get tired of that. So, yes, this police, offending police need to be checked, put in check. Just like you want to put these offending black murderers in check. Put everybody in check. Look, either police are going to be held accountable for their murderous, aggressive behavior or not. It's not a matter of more accountability or less. It is simply a matter of holding law enforcement accountable for breaking the law and violating the human rights of black people. The fact that we are still talking about police accountability is a red flag. I said that. It's kind of like asking one group of people who has little respect for black life to stop another group of people who have little or no respect for black life. I thought homicide or aggravated assault was a high priority. Aren't police supposed to be trained already and cameras or video is left to interpretation from the officer's view, no matter how blatant the offense, right? These guys, they interpret what you blatantly see. If review boards have no power, what could be gotten from a civilian review? No one should be immune or qualified for immunity from arrest and prosecution, no matter what fancy name you give it. What reason gave for it? If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. If police fail to perform their sworn duty in protest of black communities demanding for justice, when they break the law, they should lose their jobs and ability to work in law enforcement immediately, pending criminal charges if appropriate. Community members, that was a provocative thought, a little soapbox thing. Anyway, community members also emphasize other solutions that address structural factors that underline gun violence. Like, you know, that's going to have to come from the top. We live in the richest country. We have these impoverished communities. You know, they talk about residents limiting community residents recommended limiting access to guns by the small group of people at high risk of engaging in violence. They sell guns illegally. Sometimes no more than 0.25 to 1% of the city's population. Rather than looking to greater penalties for handgun possession that could increase mass incarceration, community members emphasize universal background checks, mandatory reporting, law for stolen fraud. That's already in process. I'm going to skip this right here because from Evertown Research, Victims of Crime, right? Act, right? Victim assistance funds are federal funds that can be used to support services for victims and survivors of gun violence, right? They're already being provided gun violence intervention programs such as street outreach, hospital-based violence intervention program, VBOCA, I guess they call it, victim assistance grants, should be used to help reduce gun violence and support gun violence survivors. So they got a lot of support out there. I'm running out of time, so I'm trying to run through some of this stuff. Violence intervention programs identify those who are at the highest risk and work to reduce the violence, right? Street outreach, right? Mediate conflict and prevent retaliatory violence between those who are at risk to commit or become the victims of gun violence. Group violence intervention, GVI programs, right? Utilize the call in a meeting with members of violent groups, hear from law enforcement, social service organizations, and community members that the violence must stop. Individuals seeking help are connected to social services, including counseling, education, programs, and empowerment opportunities. Hospital-based violence intervention programs. These programs are located in trauma centers and emergency departments. They engage patients while they are still in the hospital, often just hours after a violent injury, to reduce the chance of retaliation and violent injury reoccurring. They are also based in the premise that there is a unique window of opportunity to engage victims of violence in the immediate aftermath of a traumatic injury. Yeah, because you might not feel like being involved in that when you hurt. Okay? So could the violence in the black community be a scapegoat to disarm the black community, to deny black community of their Second Amendment constitutional right to bear arms? I've read an article like that. I'm not going to have time to get into this article, though. Right? There's an article from The Root. Kind of led to that, right? Kind of like due to the thing that the Black Panthers went through, right? The Panthers use guns and the law to fight injustice and lawlessness in the black community. They were able to reduce some of the violence blacks were subjected to by law enforcement in Oakland, California. Seems like some of us took the very weapons or tools we need to defend the black community from the tyranny of injustice and brutality in the 60s and 70s and turned them on the black community today. A segment of our generation have turned their guns against us, our community, and families are spiraling out of control in self-hatred, disunity, and lawlessness. Is this a case of the victim becoming like the perpetrator, self-victimizing in spite of the atrocity and trauma? A gun can be a double-edged sword. It can preserve life and liberty, and it can take life and liberty all at the same time. We don't have a gun problem. We have a wrong people with gun problems, suffering from a cancer of the mind and spirit. A misdirected mind guided by misrepresentation of self, family, and community oneness. A problem where life and death lies in the balance or the hamster wheel of chaos, where socially, mentally, economically, ethically, morally, and spiritually disenfranchised individuals seek their 15 minutes of power and infamy on the 6 o'clock news or among their peers. Some have esteem issues of inadequacy and potency, jealousy, hostility, failure, deprived, futility, hopelessness, beef, revenge, and more. Whatever drives them to commit these senseless murders is no excuse for the murder they commit. Until next week, y'all, I want to thank everybody for listening. I went a little long. Sorry about that. I want to thank Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, all my callers and listeners. Until next week, peace, y'all. Peace, excuse me. I'm a little sick today. Out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised.
There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.